Nobody around likes to be commanded. Commandments are out. Now, is Ted Turner correct? Is this something that's irrelevant to our lives? Something that's not applicable today? Think about this. Since the beginning of time, someone has estimated that man has passed 35 million laws. And I suspect it may be even more than that in the kind of laws that men have tried to pass. That's what men attempts to legislate. That's what a man attempts to do in order to regulate what's right and wrong. But the question is this: how do we know what's right? And how do we know what's wrong? Out of those 35 million laws that men around the globe have written to try to keep society in line, how do we know which ones are valid and which ones are not? You have to have some standard by which you decide what is right and wrong. Now, I would submit to you this morning, really, there's three main ways that people try to deal with this problem of figuring out how they should act, what is right and what is wrong. Some people go off the idea, well, if it feels right, then you should do it. In other words, something that feels this good cannot be wrong. They use human feeling as their main source of deciding what's right and what's wrong. But I would encourage you this morning to think of where that leads. Think of the end of where that goes. Another way people think right and wrong should be figured out, they'll say, well, let's have the majority vote on it. So we'll poll people and see what they think, and if they think murder is wrong, if the majority thinks murder is wrong, then murder is wrong. If they think stealing is wrong, then stealing is wrong. The problem with these two answers, judging right and wrong by how you feel and judging right and wrong by how other people feel, is this: feelings change. And the majority, whoever's being polled, will often shift their position. And so if that's how you determine what's right and wrong, your position is going to constantly be changing. If somebody says, and think about this, you may have heard somebody say something like this before. This is popular terminology in our culture today. People say, what's right for you may not be right for me. But when we use the term right in that manner, don't we really take all of the meaning away from the word right when we say something that's right for you isn't right for me? We really take all of the meaning for the word right out of it when we even say something like that. The truth of the matter is for something to be right, it has to be right across the board. It has to be indeed unchanging. And for that reason, we need an absolute standard. And so that's why the third way of determining what is right and wrong, I believe, is the correct way. I know it's the correct way. And that is to use the absolute standard of the Word of God. To use God's standard for what's right and what's wrong. Archimedes said this: give me a lever long enough and a place to stand, and I will move the world. Referring to the science of levers and how that works, he says simply, if you give me a place to stand with the right fulcrum and the right lever, I could raise the world. But having a lever that is long enough is not really the problem. The problem with that equation is having a place to stand in order to change the world. And the truth of the matter is, if you really wanted to move the world, then you would have to stand outside of the world. That's really the problem by using human feelings or majority votes to determine what's right and wrong. Because, see, that's all based within the sphere of where we live. If you really want to move the world, then you need a place to stand outside of the world. And that place which we stand on for right and wrong is the moral absolute of the Word of God. Specifically, as we study this, the Ten Commandments. So let's look at Exodus chapter 20. And let's read the first three verses. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, if you're not careful as you read the Ten Commandments, you may be tempted to run right past verse 1 and 2 and get right into what the actual commandments are. But I think it's important to notice what it said in verse 1. It says, and God spake all these words. So who is speaking here? God. God is the one that spoke the Ten Commandments. And not just Commandment 1 and 3 and 6, but all of the words were spoken by God. The Ten Commandments come from God. And listen, that's important to understand, and it's important never to forget. This isn't something that people just dreamed up. This is something that indeed comes right from God. It's not 10 suggestions for a better life. It's not 10 ways that maybe you should consider living. It's not 10 habits of people who are highly successful. No, it is indeed the Ten Commandments. And listen, the Ten Commandments are powerful. When you think about these ancient words that have had lasting impact all the way in today, when you look at the power of the Ten Commandments, I would submit to you that you would have to say this could come nowhere but from God. This had to come outside of man and his thinking. There was a man who was an unbeliever, and he thought that he would give the Bible a try, and so he was going to read it from Genesis through. When he got to Exodus, he arrived at chapter 20 and read the Ten Commandments. By reading the Ten Commandments, he was fully persuaded that there must be a God and that what he was reading was the rule of life and the way that he should live. Here's what he said to a friend about his experience. He said, I have read history. The Egyptians and the adjacent nations were idolaters. So were the Greeks and Romans. The wisest and best Greeks or Romans never gave a code of morals like this. Where did Moses get that law which surpasses the wisdom and philosophy of the most enlightened ages? He lived at a period of comparative barbarousness. But he has given a law in which the learning and sagacity of all subsequent time can detect no flaw. Where did he get it? He could not have soared so far above this age to have devised it himself. I'm satisfied, said the man, where he obtained it. It came down from heaven, and I am convinced of the truth of the religion of the Bible. Listen, the Ten Commandments is powerful. When you think that these tenets have existed and all of the modern laws that we have today are based on these ten precepts, it is amazing, an amazing thing, and you have to stop and say it could come from nowhere but God himself. So with that being said, with the background in place, let's look this morning at the very first of commandments. And I've entitled this morning's sermon, as we look at the Ten Commandments, My All in All. We sang the song this morning, speaking of making God our all in all, allowing Him to be the treasure that we seek, to allow Him to meet our needs, to allow Him to be everything to us, My All in All. Look again at verse 3. God declares the very first commandment, Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. So that is commandment one. It's the very first. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. We see that this was very different from the surrounding cultures and the surrounding nations that Israel had been associated with. The Egyptians had many gods. And God had just miraculously delivered them from their slavery in Egypt. And so the first commandment which is given is, Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Really, the way that we can sum up the teaching in that one phrase, Thou shalt have no other gods before me, is this. Number one, you must have a God. You must have a God. Number two, you must have only one God. And then lastly, your God must be the God of the Bible. All of that is embodied in that one sentence, you shall have, thou shalt have, no other gods before me. And as we explore this idea this morning, I would submit to you, you must make God your all in all. You must make God your all in all. One author gives an illustration of a man who purchased a statue of Christ at an auction. He took that statue of Jesus Christ and he put it in the living room. When their 5-year-old daughter saw her mother moving the statue out of the living room, she said to her mother, "Where are you going to put God?" That's a pretty good question, isn't it? And I would ask you that question this morning. Where are you going to put God in your life? The first commandment of the Ten Commandments tells us exactly where He should be placed in our life. And that is, He should be placed in number one. Will you put Him in the number one spot in your life? Or will you move Him to a back closet? Will you move Him to a secondary place? Will you move Him somewhere not as prominent as what He deserves? If you want all the blessings of God, and if you want your life to count for anything, then you must follow that first commandment and put God first in your life. Don't have any other gods before Him. Allow Him to be your all in all. And as you allow Him to be your all in all, I believe there's three main areas this morning that I want to look at where you must make God your all in all. First of all, allow Him to be all of your salvation. Allow Him to be all of your salvation. In one of his books, Chuck Colson tells of speaking to a group of Hindus in India. And of course, here in Trinidad, we're very familiar with Hinduism, and many of you probably have Hindu neighbors and Hindu friends. Chuck Colson, as he shared his testimony about Jesus Christ, he found that the Hindus in India were extraordinarily attentive. They smiled, they nodded, they agreed with everything that Chuck Colson said. Afterwards, he commented to the host of his show how receptive the audience was to the Christian gospel. To which the host responded, "Oh no," he explained, "you don't understand. To the Hindus, Jesus is just one among many gods. To them, you're accepting Christ that you speak of. It's for them just like accepting any other god in their list. Jesus is just one of many gods to the Hindus," said the talk show host. A few days later, Chuck Colson spoke to another audience of Hindus, and he had a similar experience, but this time, it was a Hindu scholar that came up to Chuck afterwards and said, "I believe exactly what you believe," said the Hindu scholar. Well, Chuck decided to put him to the test. He said, "I don't think you really believe what I believe. When I say Jesus Christ is the Son of God, I mean He is God come in human flesh. He is not just one among many, or even the best of many, but He is the one true God who appeared on earth in human flesh." He said, "You must give your complete and supreme allegiance to this Jesus Christ who came from heaven to Him and to no one else." The Hindu thought for a moment, and then he said, "You're right. I don't believe what you believe. Now I must go home and think about the things that you've said." Listen, this morning, you have to make God your all in all. All of your salvation. You can't be trusting Him and your works, Him and another God, Him and your church membership, Him and your baptism. No, it's Him alone. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," says God. You must have Him as your one way to heaven. All of your salvation must be dependent upon Him. Chuck Colson, speaking about Hindus, reminds me of the time that I went with a friend from Harvest Some of you know Vishnu. We went to see his mother, who is a strong Hindu lady. And she was bedridden, and Vishnu wanted me to go in and pray and talk with her. And I went in and I talked with her, and she could even sing hymns. She knew Amazing Grace and stuff like that. We would sing, and she'd sing those Christian hymns with me. And then I talked with her, and I said, "Do you believe that Jesus is the way to heaven?" And she would agree with me, and yes, yes, you know, I believe in Jesus and everything else. But let me tell you something. I looked at that lady, and I said, "But ma'am, do you believe that He's the only way to heaven?" And as soon as I said that, I saw her countenance change. Her whole face changed. She began to shake her head. No. My friend, listen. The only way of salvation is believing that Jesus Christ alone can save you. He has to be all of your salvation. Now, this morning, not only does He have to be all of your salvation, but this morning He needs to be all of your fulfillment. All of your fulfillment. I want you to listen to what the commentator Matthew Henry says about this first commandment. He says, "The first commandment concerns the object of our worship, Jehovah, and Him only. Thou shalt have no other gods before Me." He says, "The Egyptians and other neighboring nations had many gods, creatures of their own fancy, strange gods, new gods. But this law was prefixed because of that transgression, and Jehovah being the God of Israel, they must entirely cleave to Him and not be for any other, either of their own invention or borrowed from their neighbors. This was the sin they were most in danger of now, especially now that the world was overspread with polytheism. The sin against this commandment, which we are most in danger of," he says, "is giving the glory and honor to any creature which is due only to God." Now listen to what he says here, and think about your own life. Because you may say, "Well, Pastor Jimmy, I believe in only one God." But think about this. If you elevate your pride, your selfish pride, then that pride makes a god of self. Covetousness makes a god of money. Sensuality makes a god of the belly. He says, "Whatever is esteemed or loved, feared or served, delighted in or depended on more than God, that, whatever it is, we do in effect make a god of." Listen, God needs to be the source of your fulfillment. Where do you find pleasure? Where do you find joy? It needs to be in God. Now, often when people say things like that, many people have this idea that God is very boring, and that when we talk about finding joy and pleasure in God, we're talking about going into a totally gray room with no color, and we sit down at a totally gray desk, and we take out our Bible, and we stick our nose in that Bible, and we read at a monotone level for at least 3 hours, and that is God, right? But listen, that is not God. And if you read the Bible, you'll find out that is not God. We're not saying that it's wrong to enjoy things. But we must enjoy those things the way that God has set down in His Word that things should be enjoyed. And when we do that, then we are finding our fulfillment in God. We're finding our fulfillment the way that God has told us it is best for us to do so. And my friend, this morning, if you have anything else, even as Matthew Henry has stated so eloquently here, if you have anything that you esteem or love, fear or serve, delight in or depend on more than God, then my friend, you have a God before the true God. You have violated the first commandment. He says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before Me." not only all of your salvation, all of your fulfillment, but all of your dependence should be upon God. Listen to this. Between the two world wars, World War I and World War II, the French built an 87-mile-long defensive wall called the Maginot Line, the Great Wall of France that defended its border with Germany. They had set up three lines of defense that were incorporated into the wall. The first were stronghouses, small fortified barracks designed to sound the alarm when the invader came. Then the second line of defense was deep, reinforced bunkers designed to delay an enemy attack. But then the third line of defense was called an overage. It was deeply buried, a multi-storied fort, and these would be located every 4 to 6 miles on the France-German border. Below in the barracks at the deepest level were storehouses of ammunition, food, and of course, a constant supply of water from wells that were dug deep into the ground so that the soldiers could stay holed up there for a long time. When the Germans did finally move against France, they did not even try to attack these forts that we're talking about, the Overage forts. Not a single one of the Overage was ever overcome or ever overtaken by the Germans. Now, why was that? Because the Germans knew that those soldiers in those bunkers could survive almost indefinitely because of the resources there within that bunker. You know, this morning, God is our Overage. Inside of Him, you will find all the resources to meet your every need. Do you trust God to meet your needs? Do you rely on Him to provide for you? Or do you trust in your own intellect, your plotting and your scheming? Oh, if I can just sell this, or if I can just say this way, or if I can just do this, then I can get enough income. Is that how you do things? Or do you trust in God? Now, I want you to understand this morning, I'm not talking about laziness, all right? I'm not talking about laying down like a big slug, right, and saying, oh, well, God's going to take care of me. That's not what I'm talking about this morning. But what I am talking about is working in a way that places God first, having full confidence that as you follow His leading, that He will provide for your needs. You must place all of your dependence upon God. So this morning, I hope that even as the song has stated, that you will make Him your all in all. You know, when we think about making Him our all for salvation, that song speaks about worthy is the Lamb. Jesus Christ came and bled and died on the cross because we could not be good enough to go to heaven. He did that so that we would not have to keep the Ten Commandments because He knew we couldn't. You must trust in Him and Him alone for all of your salvation. And then this morning, even as the song sings, you are the treasure that I seek. Is He the treasure that you seek? Is He your source of fulfillment? Do you find all of your fulfillment in Him, or is there something that you love or desire or serve or even fear more than Him? If so, if there's anything that you put in that position that you desire or serve or fear more than Him, then all of your fulfillment is not in Him. And then lastly, you must place all of your dependence on Him. Trust Him to meet every need. Not your wit, not your smartness, not your being able to make this deal or get this grade or get this job, but trusting Him as you work and follow His leading, trusting Him to meet your needs. This morning, let me give you a quote from Alan Redpath. He said this. He said, "Our God is the thing or the person which we think most precious, for whom we would make the greatest sacrifice, and who moves our heart with the warmest love. He is the person or thing that, if lost, would leave us desolate." Now, is that how you feel about God? Is He that thing that, if was lost, would leave you desolate? And then I like what Martin Luther said. Very simple. Think about this. He said, whatever we make the most of is our God. Whatever we make the most of is our God. Let me ask you this morning. Do you make the most of Jesus and God and the things of the Bible? Or is there something else that takes predominance in your life? Is He your everything? Is He your all in all? Or is He just a small, itty-bitty little compartment in many, many other things? If He's that small compartment in many, many other things, then you're violating the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And what Alan Redpath can't say and what Martin Luther can't say, my friend, Jesus Christ has said most clearly, and that is, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. My friend, this morning, if there's something else that's taking precedence over God, I trust that you'll give it over this morning. Give Him first place in your life. Every head bowed, every eye closed this morning. Maybe you're here this morning and you've been trusting something other than God to save you. And you say, Pastor Jimmy, I've been trusting something else. I haven't been trusting God alone to save me. And I want you to pray for me. I need to trust Him alone. I understand it this morning. Pray for me. Is there anybody like that? Would you slip your hand up? You need prayer this morning? Not trusting God alone to save you. You've been trusting something else, but you want to get it right this morning. Anyone like that? Slip your hand up. I see that hand. Anyone?